COVID numbers continue to be near their lowest levels since the beginning of the pandemic more than 2 years ago. But physicians and researchers are anticipating a likely increase in cases and some degree of further spreading as the summer and fall seasons arrive. So prioritizing the consistent list of best practices remains in effect, and that includes testing options. The improvement in testing has been dramatic, and scientists are continuing to work to make it better and easier. One of those scientists is Jennifer Blaine Christen, associate professor at ASU, and she is with me. Jennifer, could you first describe just how much COVID testing has advanced and improved?
Oh, there's been incredible advancement. So as we started into the pandemic, there was excellent testing that was highly accurate, but that testing was taking a couple days. And especially when there are many, many people who needed to be tested, that was often 3, 4, 5 days before the results would come back. So the advancements that have been made are to really bring that same high quality testing, high accuracy testing to people in a much shorter time frame. So now we're talking about an hour, 2 hours in some cases, to get that same high quality testing result to someone right away.
When it comes to the advances that have been made in improving testing, were those things that were a gradual progression, or once you and your colleagues were starting to make advancements there, were they pretty rapid?
For many reasons, this was more rapid than what we usually see. One of the reasons was that we had excellent support from the university and the Arizona Department of Health Services that allowed us to bring in people who had a lot of experience working in diagnostics, in industry, from other groups, other expertise to really advance things at a pace that we don't usually see at the university. So we had a really big team of people all working together in a cohesive manner to make this happen. The other thing that really drove us was a sense of urgency in society. I know that everyone who's listening went through a lot of distress in the pandemic, wanting to know, is it safe to get together? What is my COVID status? So we felt the same urgency. I have kids that I wanted to send to school. They're homeschooling. So just like everyone else, we had a big sense of urgency to try to make advancements that would benefit society.
As more advances are made, how important is it to have testing available as many places as possible and to keep it affordable?
Oh, that's a really important question to ask. I think that's one thing that the pandemic has really highlighted is the healthcare inequity in our country. We have a lot of people who maybe for economic reasons, maybe for geographic locations, don't have access to the kind of testing that was available here. So we really think a lot about how we can bring diagnostics to underserved populations. How can we get them to the rural populations? One of the things that we were working on was really trying to create that test in a way that didn't require a big diagnostic laboratory with robotic equipment that would move samples around. We wanted to automate everything into something that could be held in one person's hand and really ensure that all the accuracy and laboratory skill that you usually have in a clinical laboratory is engineered into a simple cartridge so that those tests can be carried out appropriately even outside of that laboratory setting.
The testing that is done now, at least the public testing that we know of, is done for people who may want to check to make sure if they're traveling, or they want to make sure if they have an immunocompromised friend or relative and want to make sure that they're protecting others, or sometimes they feel like they have symptoms and want to make sure that they can either say they have COVID, don't have COVID, whatever it may be. Are advances being made that could get us even earlier in the curve, shall we say, where a person doesn't have to feel symptoms, or maybe a symptom is so minor? And can you tell us about work that's being done in that to make sure that what's being captured as COVID or not, either way, can be determined earlier in the course of things?
That's one of the things we continually refine in our work. So we continue to try to increase the sensitivity or the accuracy of those test results so that we are going earlier and earlier and earlier by becoming more and more sensitive to those biomarkers that we're looking for in the sample.
And is that one of the greatest challenges you have? Is it one of the most promising things you're seeing?
So one of the things that I think will be most impactful is actually looking at a panel of diagnostics. So trying to create a device that can differentiate between COVID and other respiratory diseases. So when someone has symptoms, they want to know, do I have COVID? Do I have RSV, a flu, something that's another respiratory disease, or maybe in my case, a couple of weeks ago, I just had allergies. And so knowing whether you're positive for COVID or not is really important when you have symptoms that are kind of indicative of something going on, but you want to be able to interact with your family, go to an event, and really determine whether it's something that is transmissible or it's just allergies.
As progress is made, how much can what you're learning now be applied to other illnesses, to other infectious diseases? Is the hope that there can be some overlap as far as that goes?
Oh, absolutely. That's actually where we started. So one of the reasons that I got into this work is because I had been working for many, many years on diagnostics for low resource settings or testing outside of a laboratory. And certainly we've had a great deal of advancement in the approach that we take in the instruments that we're using. So this is really going to benefit all of the testing that we do moving forward that's focused on infectious disease detection in those low resource settings. I do want to emphasize that one of the things that my work has really focused on is thinking about the populations that don't have access to testing. So economically disadvantaged or rural communities don't often have access to the hospitals or clinical laboratories. And so what we want to do is ensure that all the populations across the U.S. and eventually globally have access to the same quality of testing, that that's not compromised because they don't have the financial resources or the ability to travel to locations for testing. We've spent a lot of time really thinking about what it takes to make tests work in those environments. I've thought a lot about when the power is not available, when there's no running water, when there's a lot of dust in the air, when you have a haboob come in, does that affect how our tests work? And so we really focused on not only creating something that's small and handheld, but we thought a lot about the environment in which it would need to be used. We thought about decreasing the complexity. I always think about my kids, like an 8-year-old little boy, and I try to make technology that he could use so that it's not so complicated that even the person who's running the test would not know how to allow it to function, would not know how to operate the equipment.
Jennifer Blaine Kristen is an associate professor at ASU and leads the university's Bioelectrical Systems and Technology Group.